Saracens go into the last eight of the Heineken Champions Cup as top seeds after a five-try flourish against their quarter-final opponents in round six. But Alex Good is still wary of Glasgow Warriors.
Dangerous, dangerous players, dangerous team. We've played in the quarterfinal before and we got one over them, and then obviously in the pool game. So they'll have a point to prove and they'll want to come and, you know, leave those games behind them and just go for it.
Leinster continue their title defence against Ulster. Munster travel to surprise package Edinburgh, while Toulouse go to Paris to take on a Racing 92 side that averaged 42 points at home in the pool stage.
Chavonsi is in there, so to Nakarawa. Chavonsi for the line, he's down. Russell again, crossfield kick, meant for Simon Zeebo. Will it sit up for Simon Zeebo? Yes, it will. Zeebo gets another one.
We'll speak to Eason Asewa, Gordon Reid and Michael Bradley as we preview those four huge quarterfinals, and we'll hear from Maxime Adar, Jean Bouye and Mark McCall. Plus, we'll take a look at the last eight in the European Rugby Challenge Cup. That's all to come on the Champions Rugby Show. Well, welcome to our quarterfinal preview. It's James Burridge alongside seasoned internationals Tom May, once of Toulon, Northampton, Newcastle and England, and the former Wasps and Racing flanker Florent Rossonnier. Gents, good to have you back. There is an irony, isn't there, about this stage, because you've got three Irish provinces in the quarters, but Ireland have had a disappointing Six Nations. Wales, the total opposite. England completely fell off the wagon, didn't they, in that second half, Tom? And Saracens have got to kind of pick up psychologically from that. So a lot to kind of take on board, because players are playing at different levels. They're fluctuating in performance levels, aren't they?
They are a bit. There's so much focus from the Irish provinces, though, on the Champions Cup that you can understand why they get to these stages. If you look at the Welsh regions and all that's been going on in the regions recently, you can see why perhaps that galvanised the Welsh squad when they were together and actually brought them tighter, and actually some of the performances they put in were outstanding. England, wow. I was sat with my missus at half time in Twickenham, and she said, well, this is a bit boring, isn't it? And I don't think she expected the next 40, nor did I, to be honest. But some of those England players now look a bit jaded. And how will that affect? I know Owen Farrell didn't play this weekend, and that's important for Saracens. And I know Maro Itoje is a really important player for them as well, who wasn't involved in the game at London Stadium. So I think they'll be confident moving into their quarterfinal, but there's certainly some fluctuating performances, as you mentioned.
And Florent, there is a comfort in going back to your club, isn't there? Particularly if you've been out of form for your country.
Well, yeah, I suppose you get back in your natural environment or your more common environment. So you get back into there, you can find your habits a little bit, and you probably get also a bit more energy from the support, the players around you. Because I feel when you're with a national team, probably the pressure is a bit more, and it's probably more on you than just the team together. So yeah, I think going back to a more easier environment, I guess. But it's not going to be that easy because it's European competition.
Especially in the case of the French. Well, let's not go there, mate.
Let's not go. No, but the unfortunate part of it is, like, we've got two French clubs playing against each other, which I think there'll be one left at the end of it. So that's a bit... That's the way it goes, I guess.
Let's run you through the eight teams then who have qualified. Saracens top, Racing 92, Leinster, Edinburgh and Munster, and the pool runners-up, Ulster, Toulouse and Glasgow. We've asked you on social media, which two teams do you think will go head-to-head in Newcastle in the Heineken Champions Cup final? Matt Purcell on Instagram says Leinster Saracens, the two dominant teams over the last few years of club rugby, would be some spectacle to see. Tom, do you agree with that?
I think it's probably about right, yeah. I think the two teams, given that Saracens will be at home in the semi-final, I think they'll be in with a really good shout of getting this competition again. But Leinster, I mean, the way they've performed at times during this competition has been outstanding, with some mouth-watering rugby being played.
At Champions Cup is the Twitter handle. Search for European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook and at European Rugby Champions Cup on Instagram. Next, we'll preview quarterfinal weekend in the Heineken Champions Cup.
This is the Champions Rugby Show.
Let's start with the first match of the weekend on Saturday at BT Murrayfield, which is an intriguing clash between Edinburgh and Munster, and they are expecting a huge crowd for this one, over 35,000 at the latest count. Tom May, one of the finds of the season has been Edinburgh, but can they get to a semi-final?
I think they can. I think they'll be absolutely buzzing to get stuck into a Munster side that have got so much European history behind them. It's taken Edinburgh a long time to get to this point in the competition. And I think the way they're approaching the competition is very refreshing. And I think the way that Munster play the game as well, I think it might stress Munster far more than they're able to cope with, actually. If Edinburgh are on form, their big players are on form, the likes of Mata with his offloading game. I think Edinburgh are in with a really big shout here.
And Flora, how do you stop a team? I mean, Munster, they are so resilient and they've got such a tight cohesion defensively. How do you stop a team like a Racing, like an Edinburgh, who just love the offload?
Well, I guess for them, that's going to be to get their hands on the ball and just make sure we don't put it back in the hands of Munster, because I think Munster would probably play a game, or probably a slower game, use their forwards a lot. You know, they've got that quite solid kind of pack going and dominant in the line now. They get their ammunition from there, and if we let them play with the ball in hand or keep the ball, I think they're going to be in trouble. But I think Edinburgh are all the weapons to actually play that game. Just keep offloading, keep the ball moving, keep Munster moving left to right all the time.
Because, Tom, a number of people have been saying that Richard Cockerell's success is he's kind of brought the Leicester DNA and kind of put it into Edinburgh. But he's added to it, hasn't he? There's more to Edinburgh than just replicating what he did at Leicester.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing he addressed when he went in there were fitness levels. Which certainly some of the guys that you see playing now, they're demonstrating huge amount of ability to just get up and go again. But then also I think the mental approach to the way he guides his teams, and that will be different from club to club, because you're faced with different individuals and different players with different motivations and all the stuff that goes with being a pro player. But making them into a hard group to beat is his first job, and I think he's done that brilliantly. He's given them a freedom to play, which is great. But actually, if you're playing with a sort of gay abandon like that, and then don't have the mental capacity behind it to pull it all together, that would fall over pretty quickly. And I think that's one of the most impressive things from him.
What they don't have, Flan, is they don't have the experience of this stage much, do they? Munster have just got so used to being in a quarterfinals of Europe, of playing at this level, raising that intensity another 10%. And that counts for something now, doesn't it?
I'm sure that does. And when you look at the players on the pitch for Munster, there's going to be a lot of experience there. But I tend to join Tom on that one. I think Edinburgh, I saw some great resilience this year when they're playing. They play the full 80 minutes. They don't let it go. They're really enthusiastic till the end of it. And I think Munster might not be ready for that.
I think also, look, Edinburgh played Leinster this weekend and they beat Leinster.
It's not the same there.
No, it's not the same. But there's a fair number of the players that will be playing these quarterfinals this weekend. And you don't go into a game going, oh no, this isn't the quarterfinal. There's a meaning week on week. You can't just turn up and turn off. So I think they'll be buoyed by that win, certainly, and say, look, we're in with a shout here. And I think if they can keep performing the way they have, then they might have the ability to spring a surprise again. It'll be tough.
I think Edinburgh at home, and we haven't spoken about John Barclay coming back as well. It could be an important.
Huge, isn't it?
I think it's a great talisman for the team as well in terms of character and
Their back
leadership.
Row is with now they're bringing in Barclay into the back row. That's just ridiculous strength. Well, isn't
Hamish
it?
Watson is one of the best, and probably he's not underrated. But if you sort of see where I'm coming from, small pocket rocket who can just knock people over. You just don't see guys like that being. He thunders his way through defenders like they're not even there.
So add Mata to that and put them up against Omani and Stander.
That's quite a big battle, isn't it?
Well, I think that'd be definitely a big game then between the two back row. But I think that's back to what I say. I think, you know, both teams found a good way to play. They've got the resilience. But I find that, you know, Munster hasn't been, you know, top form. They've been playing up and down all the time. And, you know, the last few, you know, Pro 14 for them hasn't been a straightforward line. So I think in Edinburgh, they're just probably got a good chance there. even against an experienced Munster team.
Well, we're joined now by someone with connections to both sides, the former Ireland and Munster scrum half, Michael Bradley, also used to be the Edinburgh head coach, and his current side, Zebra, gave Munster a scare at Thomen Park this weekend. So, Michael, your best place to guide us this weekend. Munster, give us your latest impression of the way they're playing.
Well, in a way, you must divorce the Pro 14 from the Champions Cup for Munster, a team like Munster, because they really have a massive value on the Champions Cup, and they peak for the competition. So form in the Pro 14 is not a good guide for any of the Irish sides. So Munster would be obviously very focused, quite aware of the danger of Edinburgh as well, and the match is in Edinburgh. But they will be travelling with confidence, but not overconfident for sure.
Michael, Munster are getting back to some of the European form that we associate with them. But where are their main weaknesses, do you think, when you come up against them, when you're trying to prepare your side to take them on? Where are the little chinks in their armour that you try and expose?
Okay, so we played them yesterday, but in terms of how they play, I think it's going to put them under pressure in the quarterfinal, semi-final, if they get there, and final stages, because they at the moment seem to play quite a limited game, and you know their match against Exeter as a guideline, the final score was 9-7, but Munster had one way of playing that match, and Exeter had the ability really and had chances in that game to perhaps even get a win and turn the result over. In terms of how they set up, Munster will be very reliant on the forwards to give them a platform. Also the two centres, Farrell and Scannell, they'll be relying heavily on those two to produce go forward once the ball has left the forward area. And that's it. That's what Munster will do. If they don't change, I think they could be under pressure against Edinburgh on Saturday.
And Michael, Richard Cockerill is going to be licking his lips with this one, particularly for Edinburgh. How much have they changed since your time there?
Well, first of all, he's done a very good job, or an excellent job. This is an exciting challenge for him, but I think he's ingrained in the Leicester way, shall we say, in terms of league form first. And I think that's the big difference from my time there. We weren't able to produce, we'll say, regular victories and strong victories in the Pro 14 or the Pro 12 as it was there. And now Edinburgh are winning a lot of games and they're winning tight games. And the formation of the Scottish pack as well reflects kind of the principles that Richard would be guided on when he is a coach, and he believes in the pack first, and the backs might get the ball later on, and if they do, they better not lose it, you know. So they have, I think, seven of the starting Scottish pack in the last match against England, and that was a fantastic game of rugby. So, you know, Edinburgh will be full of confidence. Munster's strength normally is up front, but as I say, if they go and play the same style as they have in the pool stages, I would be edging towards an Edinburgh victory here.
There's some pretty strong teams left in this stage of the competition, as you would imagine. The likes of Saracens, Toulouse, Racing, Leinster. Where do you see this Champions Cup ending up?
I suspect the home advantage is critical. I think the winners of this of the Munster match that you guys are looking at, at the moment, or that we're talking about at the moment, they play Warriors versus Saracens. So, you know, it could be an intriguing match if you have the two Scottish sides get through, because all the eight sides are quality. Toulouse and Racing, and the match is in Paris, but Toulouse are playing fantastic rugby at the moment. So you don't know. It could be any of the eight that are left. The favourites for me would be Saracens and Leinster. But, I mean, that's kind of hedging my bets, as they say, having one horse in both semi-finals if it happens to go that way.
And, Michael, you retired back in 1995, just when this tournament was getting going. So let me put you back in the red jersey, and you were playing for Munster now. How much would you have relished playing in this competition on this type of weekend?
As I say, it's a massively important weekend for all the Irish provinces, and when I coached Edinburgh in 2011-12, we had Munster in our group. And trying to explain to the players at the time the difference between playing Munster in the Pro 12 and playing Munster in the Champions Cup is just massive. So Munster will like this because they will go over there as slightly underdogs in most people's books. maximum 50-50, and that suits them perfectly. They won't be fazed by it, and they do have the advantage of being at this stage on a very regular basis. So it should be an intriguing match.
Michael, great to have you on the pod. Thanks very much indeed. Enjoy the weekend.
Okay, enjoy the matches. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Tom May, you're Richard Cockerill. What are the three areas you're going to target in order to beat Munster?
Do I have to have three?
Right, okay. Give me one or two.
I'll give you one.
I think the first area that he has to address is he has to face that pack up front, and he has to say, right, we're here, we're going to match you. Because if they don't, if they're not even to able to gain parity, then they're really going to be struggling. And off the back of that, they need to employ the same tactics, I think, that they've been using throughout this competition. The ability to break from deep, to offload, because I think that will stress Munster. And you know, I think Michael Bradley's highlighted it. The way that Munster play the game might actually hinder them as they move through this competition, especially when you come up against a side like Richard Cockerill's Edinburgh.
Florent, final word?
Yeah, no, I think I agree. But, you know, matching the forward, I think the line-out battle will be interesting because Munster like to feed themselves off those line-out and try to play off that. And if you can just, you know, counter them there, I'll give you a better option.
We asked you ahead of the show on social media, which two teams do you think will go head-to-head in Newcastle in the Heineken Champions Cup final? Tad Fanning on Facebook predicts Racing 92 against Munster, and the game this weekend, Saturday the 30th of March, 12:45 GMT, Edinburgh against Munster at BT Murrayfield, Channel 4, Virgin Media, BT Sport 3 and beIN Sports. And could this be a UK quarter-final attendance record for the tournament? The existing landmark is 37,888 for Saracens against Ulster. And I know that BT Murrayfield is doing extremely well selling those tickets. Tom, your predictions then?
I am going to go with a Edinburgh win.
Florent?
I followed Tom on that. I think Edinburgh's got the... It could be the year to this year for that.
You've seen what I did in my last prediction.
Well, I was going to say, you did actually do quite well last week, Thomas, last time. Yeah. 9 out of 10.
Thank you.
For Sean Holly and Tom May, but they ruined the fun by choosing... You did, yeah, I might have to set a rule about this. You basically chose the same teams.
Well...
So we could play who gets in first the quickest.
Man United are about to play Huddersfield. I'll just go with Huddersfield because he's chosen Man United.
Maybe we'd toss a coin for that.
No. I want to win.
Next, to Leinster against Ulster. This is going to be an absolutely huge game in Dublin. And I'm delighted to say that we're joined, firstly, by a four-time Champions Cup winner.
And the man who kicked them to victory now lifts the trophy, Ethan Athewa, in his final performance for Leinster. Lifts the trophy that means so much. They have equal to lose his record. It's their fourth title, and they have joined Saracens, only the second club to win all 9 matches. It is an astonishing performance from one of the powerhouses in European rugby.
Issa, do you miss it?
Yeah, 100% I miss it. Jesus, you can hear the tune in the background and hear the crowds. I miss it a lot, actually. Miss playing. I don't miss training, but I miss playing.
So, Tom May, you're exactly the same, aren't you?
Well, steady on. I didn't think I was in that bad a shape.
Issa, this match this weekend then, Leinster-Ulster. There's a lot of conversation about how Johnny Sexton's slightly out of form at the moment. This is the kind of match that should definitely help bring that kind of thing back, shouldn't it?
100%. This is, you know, I've seen Johnny come back from Six Nations that haven't gone as planned, and he's just more motivated than anyone in the Leinster setup. He'll be there at the crack of dawn doing his extras on top of extras. So, he'll get the club going this week, which is much needed after their performance on the weekend.
So give us a flavour of what somebody like Sexton would be doing in a quarter-final week. What are those small details? Give us an insight. Give us a behind-the-scenes kind of picture.
So for Johnny, when, you know, a lot of the attack or the majority of the attack would go through his head, it probably starts on the Saturday or Sunday before the week actually begins, to be honest. That's the detail Johnny goes to. So, they had a loss to Edinburgh in the weekend, but a lot of guys would have been rested coming out the back of Six Nations. So a lot of the small talk and small meetings happen on a Monday. in the partnership with the coaches and just get a real good overview and clear setup of what the week actually looks like. And then it's just about everyone, you know, getting clear on a Monday so everyone knows their role and part of the week as the week rolls on.
Issa, is there anything different that you think Leinster have added to their game this season that, that makes them a slightly different proposition?
Oh, I think that was a really big question in the off-season last year that everyone had to ask. And it wasn't about reinventing the wheel. It was just more so tweaking and improving on the aspects of the game we weren't actually happy with last year. So just the style of play is the same, just sort of some of the fundamentals that you try and keep sort of consistent through all the different players that swap in and out. That would have been one of the work-ons.
And Issa, when you look at what Cullen and Lancaster have done, I mean, kind of following on from Tom's question, how do you build on success? Because, I mean, look at what happened to Saracens last year. They fell well off the pace in Europe. They've got it back this time, but it hasn't really happened to Leinster under these two. What are they doing which keeps performance levels ticking at such a high bar?
Leo and Stuart are very detailed planners of the game, and not just the game itself and the week, but I think one of the skills both of them have is to forecast out, you know, 6 months in advance and 9 months down the track. So their planning for this season would have started well into the back end of last season before we probably even lifted the trophy in Bilbao. So I think that's one of their really big skills, is their willingness to learn and sort of stay ahead of the curve, because you want to forecast out and predict where the squad's going to be in 6 months' time, and that often happens prior to the finals of the season before. So I think it's one of their absolute skills that they are very good at.
So we've talked quite a bit on this podcast about how the Irish are so good when it comes down to the European sectors during the season. Is it a case as a player? I found it very difficult as a player to turn off from one week to another, whether I knew my club was focusing on one competition or another in specific terms. Now, of course, there are players that are rested and rotated out of the system, but is there a more intense focus from the likes of Leinster when it comes to European weeks? Because surely that could catch you out in your domestic season as well.
Well, we probably don't differentiate the two as much at Leinster, and that's only my personal experience of Leinster, because we probably drive competition for the jersey bigger than the competitions. So, and when you have coaches like Stuart and Leo that are willing to give young guys a shot, even on the big days, it stops you sort of being complacent. So there's probably just more of a buzz in the European weeks, because something as simple as you swap the balls out, and then all of a sudden you're playing with a different type of ball, and there's probably just a buzz of energy, because I think it's how we build our weeks throughout the whole season, really.
You talked about improvement in performance level. From what you've seen of Leinster in Europe this season, can you spot anything different the way they're trying to play? And is there one player in that team who has taken their level of performance up a notch?
I think one area of the game they're still working on is the balance between the attacking rugby and the kicking game. And I definitely think someone like Luke McGrath at halfback, when he's been in there, between him and Jamison Gibson-Park, those two in particular have a really good relationship around if one starts, one's coming off the bench, but also the difference of the guy coming off the bench, the impact he makes. And I think Jamison's been absolutely outstanding when he comes off the bench and just is able to turn the speed of the game up a notch. And I think that ties into working with the forwards and obviously Johnny when he's been there, or Ross Byrne, just understanding the speed at which the game needs to be played. Even at times last year, I think we didn't get that right all the time. So I know when a lot of the Irish guys go away into November and Six Nations camps, it's widely discussed that there's got to be the right style of play needed. And we obviously found that out in Bilbao in the final, that we went through a game to win it rather than actually score tries just to actually look good. So wasn't obviously how we planned to go out and play in Bilbao, but we sort of adapted, and I think that's a big learning curve. And I think Jamo and Luke McGrath in particular have been outstanding.
And just finally, Issa, what was your standout moment in a Leinster jersey in Europe for you?
I still harp on back to Munster, Leinster, Crow Park in 2009. I've only got one picture up in my house, and it's a picture of that, of one rugby picture, sorry, of that day. Just the whole stadium was over 84,000 people, and it looked like a chessboard of Leinster and Munster fans. So that day will forever stick in the front of my memory for sure.
Great stuff. Issa, wonderful to have your insight on the podcast. Really appreciate it. And, well, fingers crossed from your perspective for Leinster this weekend.
Thank you very much. Yep, fingers crossed. I'll be definitely in Leinster's corner. That's no doubt.
That was Leinster. What about Ulster? Tom May, they've got four successive victories in the Pro 14. They have a lot of momentum right now.
Yeah, and they've got a lot of decent players. So it's not going to be just a walk in the park for Leinster. I do think they'll win it, but I don't think it's going to be as easy as many might feel. You know, look at Stockdale on the wing. That guy can pull something out of nothing in any scenario. I think he's really been fantastic for Irish rugby since he's burst onto the scene. Rory Best, probably coming towards the end of his career, will want to leave a lasting memory for him within Europe. If this is to be his last European game, then he'll want to make it a big one. And then in the back row, the likes of Henderson and Murphy, you know, they've got a really big job on their hands to try and stop this Leinster juggernaut gaining pace at the weekend.
And Florin, it's interesting because you look at that Ulster team, there are a number of players like Jordy Murphy that mm-hmm. Tom's talked about, who, not to do Ulster down, but they've gone to Ulster because perhaps things weren't working out at another club, particularly Murphy at Leinster. Billy Burns, of course, moved across from Gloucester to, you know, take that opportunity. Addison potentially at Sale. He's been looking for a new opportunity. And bring them together, there's a lot of fire in the furnace, isn't there?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you arrive in a new club, you want to challenge yourself and obviously try to perform the best you can. I mean, you know, first season there, you want to impress everybody around. So I think there's a bit of that. But I think also Ulster this year, I think they were in a tough group, really, to qualify through for that quarterfinal. When you look at, you know, their dressings, Scarlett, Leicester, you know, it's not an easy one. And they built themselves through. They went through there and they managed to go it. They've got the players, they've got the mentality, they've got definitely the attitude. And Rory Best, you know, 36 going on, as you say.
Ian Henderson as well. Someone who's the most Henderson, underrated, you know, isn't he?
Scott Dell coming, 22, what is it, 22 now, I think?
The difference between having good players, though, isn't it, and having world-class players from 1 to 23 that are really so cohesive that actually whatever they do, they completely understand what the other's doing. I think Ulster are several stages behind the development process of Leinster, clearly, but they've certainly got enough in the tank to leave a few dents.
But they got thumped. We talked about the difference between Pro 14 and Europe. They got thumped by Leinster in January, 40 points to 7. Do you try and use anything from that to kind of prepare yourself for this, or was that just a totally different match and experience?
Well, no, I think when you come up against any side in any competition and they do a job on you, look at Saints and Saracens over the past few years, when you've got someone's number, it seems to go down that route for two or three games. So there'll be elements of that performance that will still be ringing in those minds. And it's about targeting those, I guess, dysfunctioning moments in the performance and trying to get those changing and working in a positive manner. Because if they don't work and they can be exposed and the cracks appear again, then it all tumbles down around you.
Actually, the Cronin Best matchup's going to be quite, you know, spicy, isn't it? Because both those two were battling for the green jersey.
Yeah, and I think Cronin's probably had it pretty tough over the past few weeks, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He missed out on one of the internationals because they need to know about their strength in depth moving towards the World Cup.
Kind of Joe Schmidt, are you watching? You feel sure Cronin, yeah, after being dropped as well after that, winning his first ever start for Ireland against Italy. This is the perfect riposte for him, isn't it?
Definitely. I think there's some big opportunities here for individual players, but it's just you're coming up against Leinster. That might be the issue.
Where on earth would you, if you're Dan McFarlane, where would you target Leinster?
I think maybe try and get, you know, you have to try and stop their back row getting in at the breakdown. If they get all over your ball, as you know, Florin will know too well, that their main job is to really disrupt Ulster. So they have to stop them getting to that ball first.
And breakdown as well, Florent, of course.
Yeah, breakdown, I think, is, you know, Ulster had to control that breakdown if they want to play and be able to secure that ball. But also, in the other way, you know, you're going to play against, you know, that very good back row and you've got to be there first. But if you're not there first, you've got to slow them down enough so Leinster doesn't get that momentum. As soon as they get a bit of momentum, you know they can play and they can push the ball.
We asked you ahead of the show, which two teams do you think will go head-to-head in Newcastle in the Heineken Champions Cup final? JK Tavares, Chris Monaghan and Phil Matson all predict a Leinster Saracens final. Lewis Strand on Instagram says, Ulster to shock everyone and go the whole way, wouldn't they just? Saturday the 30th, 17:45 GMT for Leinster against Ulster. It's a sellout at the Aviva Stadium, BT Sport 3 and on BN Sports. Florent, your prediction?
I think, you know, Leinster here. But once again, I think, I mean, quarterfinal anyway, everybody's going to go full on and just want to go through. But I think Leinster, as Tom said, you know, a couple of level, you know, years in experience or years of building up that squad. And I've got to give Tom a reason on that.
So do you want me to go for Ulster now that he's gone for Leinster?
Just to shake it up a bit. You might be thanking me via the semi-final podcast.
Leinster.
You can get involved with the Heineken Champions Cup on social media. At Champions Cup on Twitter. Search for European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook. And at European Rugby Champions Cup on Instagram.
You're listening to the Champions Rugby Show, the official European rugby podcast.
This is James Burridge on the Champions Rugby Show, previewing the Heineken Champions Cup quarterfinals with Tom May and Florent Rossignol. Still to come, we'll hear from Maxi Madar and Jean Boyer on Racing against Toulouse, and we'll look ahead to the last eight in the European Rugby Challenge Cup as well. But next, we'll concentrate on Saracens against Glasgow Warriors. There were wins for both these sides at the weekend. Glasgow comfortably defeated Cheetahs to stay at the top of Guinness Pro 14 Conference A. And Saracens, meanwhile, bounced back from a tough first half to defeat Harlequins in the Gallagher Premiership. Director of Rugby Mark McCall thinks they'll have to improve for the quarterfinal.
It's a big game. If we play like we played in the second half, we'll be very happy. But today's good because we can take a lot from the second half. A lot of feel-good around the club as we go into next week. But the first half there is a warning sign to us that we need to be way better than that. And sometimes you're 17-6 down against these really good sides, you won't be able to come back from it.
So does that extraordinary 38-all draw in the Calcutta Cup add anything extra to this Sarries Glasgow England-Scotland quarter-final? Here's Alex Good.
I don't think you're ever going to get a game like that again. A bonkers game of rugby. I think it adds to it in that is a rivalry. You know, that's Scotland versus England is a huge rivalry. Whether that's club or international, it's always going to be there. They've got a lot of Scottish internationals. We've got some English internationals. But ultimately, it's about which team thinks clearly under pressure and physically is right at the edge without boiling over. We have to be our physical best, and they'll want to do the same. And that's rugby. It gets a bit feisty at times, but doesn't deter from the fact that, you know, you've got to be clear in your mind, make good decisions and play good rugby.
Florent, are Glasgow hard-nosed enough? Do they have enough bully boys in the pack, you know, test match warriors kind of thing to take on Sarries?
I think Sarries will obviously fill in the best team, and they've got all the international guy coming in, you know, this weekend. Resting a couple still, but you still have, you know, the Vinipola and the Maitland and all those guys coming back in. So from the Glasgow point of view, they've been playing a good rugby. I think they found a certain pace with, you know, a couple of young players, you know, Adam Hastings putting his mark on the team now a little bit more. But I still think, you know, if you look at the last game, it was a pool game in there. I think Sarries at home just was too strong that day, and I think that'll be the same this weekend for me.
That was a balmy game because I was there for that one, and Glasgow scored three tries in the first half just when Sarries thought they were going to romp away with it. Dave Rennie has said that they need to keep possession. How do you starve a team like Saracens of possession?
Well, just keep possession. So you have to be strong forwards. You know, you have to have your back row working extremely hard to support the ball and to be the link in whether it's a breakdown, whether it's coming off the back, and make sure you fight for everything at contact situation, because, and obviously your kicking game just got to be either very accurate or don't kick the ball, because that's the opportunity. And when we know what Saris can do from the back of the field, we don't kick back to them.
The problem, I think, going from that point of view, is that we haven't got there yet. Saracens, they love defending. So when another team have the ball, they sort of...
It's that whole Wolfpack mentality,
yeah,
isn't
exactly.
It?
You know, they love the fact that, you know, they can really try and, you know, take people on physically, as Alex Good just mentioned. They really want to try and impose themselves. And I think that's going to be the tough ask for Glasgow.
And particularly someone like Hastings, you know, 2 years ago, it's Finn Russell. And Hastings, he still needs time to develop into this player. It's almost, this match is going to be a massive test of him and a number of other those kind of players in this Glasgow team who are definitely developing, but they're nowhere near as experienced at this level.
No, they're not, but I mean, you look at the Glasgow side and you look at their squad. They've got a lot of internationals. And you look back to the England-Scotland game, there's a lot of those guys that will be playing, that were played in that fixture. And they're exciting players to watch. And I think that's what they're going to have to try and bring to the game. I think their biggest problem, you look at these two sides through the pool stages, when it comes to the stats, the tackles made, the metres gained, the amount of passes they make, they're pretty similar. The mental edge is the difference. Saracens' ability to just know exactly what they're doing, know how to do it, and get it executed is almost second to none in this competition. You know, arguably someone like Leinster would say that their mental edge is just as strong. And given also, I think it was 2-3 years ago that we had exactly this same fixture.
And they got thumped.
And they got absolutely thumped. And we thought it was an opportunity then for Glasgow to really try and progress to the semi-finals, and it all tumbled to pieces.
So compare Glasgow with Edinburgh. Do Edinburgh have a bit more mental resilience than Glasgow?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. I think from what we've seen this season, there's a maturity that Edinburgh has got that Glasgow hasn't reached yet. And I think it's a work in progress, bringing some young players. The international players, Scottish international, obviously raised the bar on the bar. Scotland's going, you know, I've done well, probably not so well in this Six Nations, but, you know, there has been a progression across the Scottish rugby in general, I think, and they all benefit. But, you know, we've got two Scottish teams in a quarterfinal this year.
Saracens they're not in the same realm as they were a couple of years back, though. That said, they've only lost 4 all season, I think it is. So for them having a bit of a struggle in terms of, or not a struggle, but they're not in the same, they're not as precise and they're not as infallible as they have been in previous years. There is opportunity for Glasgow.
Well, let's speak to Gordon Reid, the London Irish prop who played for Glasgow the last time they reached the quarterfinals of this competition. Played for Scotland in that extraordinary Six Nations closer at Twickenham too. Gordon, thanks for joining us.
How are you doing? You all right?
Give me a reason why Glasgow are going to beat Saris this weekend.
I think Glasgow's got a lot of young talent coming through, and they've been bred into like a winning team. I think there's something special. I think there's a lot of good talent there, and boys coming back from injury. So, I think they'll hopefully do pretty well at the weekend.
And if you're taking on Saracens, Gordon, where's the weakness? Because James keeps asking me this question.
He hasn't been able to answer it for about 3 years.
It's definitely a hard question. I've got some good talent. I wouldn't say there's just... I think you just keep on going at them. I think if you try and get them up front, they've got a good pack. But I think if you just try and... The big boys, I would say if you kind of run them about a little bit and like knock them down, and hopefully they get a bit tired out, and that could hopefully create some space on the backs for your big runners such as Stuart Hogg and Ali Price to try and target around the side of the rucks, keep the rucks under like 3 seconds, fast ball, win the air battle, the ball in the air, and the kick. Obviously Saris kick quite a lot, that's where the threat is, the kick, and they get up and they try and put you under a lot of pressure. If they do well in up front, the forwards, I think the backs, like there's a lot of young talent coming through, as I said before. You've got Stuart Hogg, I think's back in the team now too. If you get hit with the ball in his hands, and he could kind of export a lot of their players, kind of thing. But I think the big battle is going to be up front for the, because it's quite a young Glasgow pack. You've got Xander Ferguson back in, which is good. It beats up the pack a little bit. But I think if they kind of take them up front, I reckon they could possibly do a good job on them.
Because back in January, Gordon, that was a bizarre first half when Glasgow were leading at one point against Saris, and they did play the breathtaking stuff, but they probably lacked, as Tom alluded to earlier, this kind of mental maturity. They might switch off for 4 or 5 minutes, and that you just can't do that against Saris. So that, I imagine Dave Rennie is just going to be... If that's going to be on the whiteboard this week, isn't it? You know, sticking in the game mentally because you cannot afford to switch off.
Yeah, you're right. There is a lot of young boys, but they've had a lot of experience. You've got a few of the boys that have been called up to Scotland and had that experience up there. And I think that'll do put them in good stead for this big game against Saris.
And Gordon, it's been a good year for Scottish rugby. Where do you think Edinburgh and Glasgow can improve to make sure that actually this season, with them both being in the quarterfinals, this becomes a regular occurrence?
I think Edinburgh is doing fantastic this year. I think Richard Cockles, he's done really well with them. He's kind of a desire and then will to win in that Edinburgh team, and I think that's really good for Edinburgh. I think Edinburgh win this game at the weekend, 100%. Glasgow has got a bigger challenge because, I mean, Saris, although they've not been really playing the best rugby they've played for a while, I think it's still an occasion. So I reckon they could step up. But hopefully, obviously, we get two Scottish teams winning at the weekend. And I think that if they win at the weekend, that means it's a head-to-head Glasgow against Edinburgh.
That would be an astonishing moment, wouldn't it be, for Scottish rugby? I mean, just
100%. Yeah, we didn't have the best of Six Nations this year. Obviously, with that kind of everybody keeps on harping on about it, but it's good to get the cut back to Scotland. But we want to be breeding winners in Scotland, and although we drew, it was still a kind of a disappointing kind of pill to swallow.
How was the party afterwards?
To be honest, I took it quite gentle. I was actually all right, just did a glass of red wine and just went to my bed. You know, I'm getting a wee bit old.
You're so modest, Gordon. You're so modest.
I was back at training, you know. I'm the professional.
Of course you were.
I didn't go back to my hotel room and had a KFC.
Declan's not listening. Don't worry, Declan's not listening. Gordon, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast. Enjoy the match.
Perfect. Cheers, buddy. Thank you.
So then, fellas, Saturday the 30th of March, 15:15 GMT, Saris Glasgow, Allianz Park on BT Sport 3 and BN Sports. Tom?
I'm going to go with a similar result to the last time they played at Allianz Park in the quarterfinals. I think Saracens will come in with a big win.
Flora?
Yeah. Saris, yeah, I think there's no doubt about that. I think they won't let that opportunity. They need to push on Saris. They have a poorish form at the moment, and they're coming back into a bit of a win against Quinn yesterday. I think they'll be fired up, and obviously Farrell coming back in probably be marching that on quite nicely for them.
Well, the final Heineken Champions Cup quarterfinal is the all-French clash between Racing 92 and Toulouse on Sunday afternoon at the Paris La Défense Arena. Here's Maxime Médard of Toulouse talking about the effect that artificial surface will have on the game.
The type of surface increases the speed and the number of tries. It also means defences have very little time to get back in position. When you have the ball, you can inject extra speed and put your opponents on the back foot. They're a side that scores a lot more at home than away, so we know what to expect. And it'll be a big challenge for us to go there and get a result away to Racing.
Maxime Médard, who's been key for Toulouse this season. Well, the former flanker, now Toulouse's line-out coach, Jean Bouillot, is delighted by the team's resurgence this season.
Yes, it's incredible. And above and beyond our expectations, particularly in terms of the wins that we've put together and our style of play with high standards. As coach, it's very pleasing, particularly off the back of the last few seasons, which were very tough. It's great to see the players enjoying it so much and to have the club's DNA running through their veins. This was our aim a year or two ago, and they're now fulfilling it above and beyond what we could have imagined.
For the neutral, it's great to see Toulouse back in the thick of things. But we have a former Racing man here, and I would not be doing my job if I didn't ask him for his tactical insight and opinion about about Racing this season, first of all?
Well, I think I've said it before. I think Racing have needed to grow up and need to win, to learn to win. And I think they've shown over the year they can reach the top end of the competition. But to close it, they always have been struggled. The funny part this year, I keep watching them and, you know, they're six in the top 14. You know, for a team like that, is that a bit below par? I think a little bit.
Thomas, you've played in France. What do you make of it?
Racing have been slow this year, haven't they? Yeah. I think they won this weekend, so they find themselves in fourth, actually. They had a good win, didn't they, Florent, against Bordeaux. But I can see this being a game where it's like 52-55 or something like that. You've got two teams that Racing have had to try and develop their game and bringing in the likes of Finn Russell and Simon Zeebo has been a brilliant addition for them. The plastic field works for the style of play that they're using at the moment. Toulouse, well, they've been sort of banging on that offload door for years. It hasn't worked and now things are starting to really go well for them. They are clear leaders of the top 14 and are putting some real decent performances in.
I mean, Toulouse at the moment, I think that the stat is like top team in defence, second in attack in terms of, you know, point score, and Racing still below them, you know, they're just surfing. And I think Toulouse are just is in that confident moment. They go anywhere, they don't seem to worry, they just play and they enjoy it. And the players seem to totally be in adequation with what the coaches ask them, and all together it seems to be such a good package. That pitch as well, I think, you know, artificial pitch for a team like Toulouse, that's going to be, you know, it's brilliant for them because that's going to play in their hand.
That said, what happened in Dublin against Leinster? Because that wasn't a great performance by Toulouse. Has that just made them question their ability when the pressure's really on? Have they been under consistent pressure enough this season?
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe they haven't been mentally challenged as much, but I think that game in Leinster... Yeah, maybe they find themselves out of the comfort zone. I think Leinster play a good game there that day as well. They kind of been really starved of ball and kind of you know, controlled by the opposite team. If you see, they didn't really have much to put under their belt.
I think Toulouse over the past two seasons they've been coming back to their best, but going up against a side like Leinster, they probably think, well, these guys they're probably maybe a step too far for us at the moment, and they're just sort of testing the water. And you can't test the water against someone like Leicester because it doesn't work. So I think they're going to be very confident going to La Défense on Sunday of coming away with a win.
Because they're familiar with it.
Yeah, because they know what they're coming up against.
They know the ground and they know what they're coming up against. Yeah. Whereas Leinster, they're probably not.
I don't agree. And, you know, it's probably better that Florent answered this, but I don't agree with the whole French don't travel anymore. I think they've got enough foreign players in playing within the leagues that it's actually, you know, since I went over there in 2009, that was one of the main things that Philippe Saint-André was trying to address. Get some guys in that don't understand the difference of why you should lose away from home or and win at home. And I think now we're starting to see teams go, right, we're going to win week in, week out. And I think Toulouse have gone back now to a predominantly French squad. And have now changed that mindset, and they'll take on anyone, anywhere.
They may have gone back to it. Didn't really make any difference in the tournament, though, did it? Florent, when you look at Toulouse, Colbe is leading the stats for defenders beaten. Give us another player who we should be keeping our eye on.
Well, I think the scrum half at the moment, Dupont, has been phenomenal. I think he's been in good form. He's bringing, you know, lots of different options at the base of the ruck small. He darts, he pass, he run, he shouts. So I think he's one of the key elements there. But, you know, they found the Romain Tamac, you know, we saw him in the Six Nations with France. I think he's coming to something, but he's still a bit young. I think he probably don't have that kind of maturity to influence the game so much. He can be genius on one or two occasions in the game, but, you know, he hasn't got the full maturity, I think, yet. So Dupont seems to have grown. I like Ramos at fullback because I just think, you know, there and go and just bring the ball back and, you know, see what happened.
He's like a traditional Toulouse fullback, isn't he? Sort of Clément Poitrineau-esque.
Totally. But there's one big thing we forgot here is Toulouse is the last team, well, beat Racing in February at Racing in a game. So it could work both ways. You know, Racing would obviously see it as a, you know, a game for them to redeem themselves. But on the other hand, Toulouse, they're going to go there in full confidence.
We asked you ahead of the show, which two teams do you think will go head-to-head in Newcastle in the Heineken Champions Cup? Gary on Instagram says, Racing 92 against Saracens with a Racing 92 win, of course. And Ross McLean on Facebook, Racing 92 against Saris, both teams far too strong for the rest. And I feel Racing will pip Leinster in the semi-final via some Russell brilliance. And Tom May, everyone is waiting for Finn Russell to light up this competition. He's done it in the Six Nations. This is his moment, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because I think he's lit up Racing's performances this year. Okay, they've still been slightly inconsistent at times, and they're just sort of clawed their way back up the domestic league without anyone really noticing. But actually, he can ignite that team, and some of the players around him, they now are probably understanding him more than they were when he first arrived. You know, Vakatawa running into space that Finn Russell has seen and created is a frightening prospect for any midfield.
This might sound a stupid question. Quite happy for you to tell me off for it, but if you're Finn Russell and your French is not that hot, how much of a communication issue is it?
Do you know what? You're not as daft as you look, mate. I had a game where I played. My French wasn't too bad. It wasn't fluent at the time, but I played for Toulon at 10, and I was receiving the ball from an Australian who didn't speak French. So I had to speak to him in English, turn around and look, and I had Georgians, South Africans that could speak French, South Africans that couldn't, French that could speak English, French that couldn't, and English blokes like Chris Chesney. And it's the ability to turn around, look at the ball, look at the defence, make sure you get your communication right, and then look outside you and see who's outside you and what language they're speaking in. It is really difficult. Now, I don't know what Finn Russell's French is like, and I'm sure it's okay, but it's really difficult when you're trying to explain plays, okay, you've got systems and you've got calls that people know exactly what they're supposed to be doing, but it's the little details around that of, just leave it a bit later.
Well, you almost have to read body language better, don't you, in terms of trying to second guess what your centre might be doing, or they have to read you.
There's a few sort of signs and signals in rugby that's just international language, isn't it, and everyone understands what's going on. But actually, you're trying to keep some of that away from the defence. It's a difficult... I'm really pleased you asked that question, James.
It's taken me 3 years to get that from Tom May. Right, let's look ahead to the game then. Get your predictions. It's Sunday, 31st of March, 4:15 local time, CET, 3:15 BST. Clocks go forward Saturday night, don't forget. Full house expected. Bring your popcorn. Barry La Défense Arena, BN Sports, FRDER, BT Sport 3, 4K UHD. Florent.
It's a big question for me here because I think I picked Toulouse at the start of the tour of the competition and thought that'd be the team who were going to come and create a surprise. So, and I've been following them and I do really like watching them playing. I do really enjoy, but I'm Racing. It's my club and Racing. I give you that opportunity.
There's my opportunity, Toulouse. I'll go with Toulouse away from home. I think they'll... they'll continue with their form this season. I think they'll come away with a win and progress to the semis.
I do want to say I still think Toulouse got something special.
He's basically had to choose them.
Well, he'll never be invited back.
No, exactly.
Now, the Heineken Champions Cup final has proven to be a really hot ticket. High demand means there are no tickets currently on general public sale for the match at St James's Park on Saturday, the 11th of May. Allocations are being held for supporters of the two clubs that will contest the final. A limited number of tickets may come back onto public sale in the future. HeinekenChampionsCup.com and the competition's social media channels are where you should go for the latest information. But if you want to be at finals weekend in Newcastle, you can get tickets now for the European Rugby Challenge Cup final. And we'll talk about that competition next.
You're listening to the Champions Rugby Show.
This is the Champions Rugby Show with James Burridge, Tom May and Florent Rossigneur. And it's time to look at the last eight matches in the European Rugby Challenge Cup. Let's start on Friday evening, the 29th of March, Sale against Connacht. Tom, that should be a really fascinating one because Connacht will have loads of confidence. They love this tournament as well. And Steve Tymond is desperate for a trophy.
I was about to say that would be my first point to make is that Sale wants some silverware. They've invested heavily. They're starting to invest heavily in players. The rumours of the players that are arriving next season would want to be playing in a side that's capable of winning silverware. I watched their their game against Newcastle this weekend, and the first 40 minutes that they put in was pretty impressive. The pace with which they played with the ball was brilliant. Connaught, they're third in Conference A in the Pro 14, no mugs. They turned over Benetton this weekend. So I think that's going to be a really interesting game on Friday night in Manchester. I'll go for Sale with that, though.
Saturday the 30th, La Rochelle, Bristol, Florent. Bristol, again, I suppose they're looking at the Premiership. They know they've got to keep the Premiership probably at number one. So they can throw the ball around against La Rochelle. Equally, that could be quite dangerous.
They can be as well. And I think La Rochelle as well is in a bit of that, you know, moment in the season where they haven't really been convinced anybody, you know, about the change of coaching, you know, since Colazo gone. I don't think they've found that momentum they had, and they don't seem to be to have that element of attractive rugby they had you know, probably a year ago, that, you know, all that energy you saw on the pitch, etc. And at Bristol Bay, I like them because I think they're well coached, and I think they're progressing really, really fast. I think it's another team which there's got some investment made in the club in the future. And I think that's probably not their priority, as you said, in terms of, you know, season objective. I still think that they're still going to want to push probably one more round. So, you know what? I still probably pick La Rochelle because they're home, and I think they want to probably redeem themselves a bit about the flat season they're having by pushing. But I think Bristol will be pushing them really, really hard.
Tom, Worcester Quins is also on Saturday. Is it weird playing another English club in Europe?
Yeah, I never liked it. They're not as good as a trip, are they?
As if you're going to be allowed a jolly.
I think, I wonder where this competition comes now for Worcester. It's a big distraction, given what's going on domestically for them. You've now got Leicester, Worcester and Newcastle in a massive dogfight, maybe even Wasps. At the bottom of the Premiership. Quins, they're doing pretty well, aren't they? I think they've sort of rejuvenated themselves under Paul Gustard. Got some good players, some international players.
And he'll want a trophy in his first year as well, won't
he? He'll want to put down a marker early on, and I think that's probably what those senior players at Quins will be looking for as well. That said, this can work both ways for Worcester. It's either a distraction, and they look at it as that, or they say, right, this is an opportunity to kick ourselves into gear to try and gain some form that we can then take back to the domestic.
Well, you can try some things, and it doesn't matter if it doesn't come off.
Yeah, exactly. But and then you get into the argument, oh, well, in relegation fight, can you try those things? Who knows what the mentality behind that is? I'll go for a Quins away win.
And then probably the match of the weekend, Clemore at home against Northampton, Sunday the 31st, and the pool stage match of this. Stan Marcel was just ridiculous. Basketball stuff. Are we set for more of the same?
I hope so, because I commentated on that, and that was unreal. I was out of breath by the end of it. 80-plus points. Ridiculous. Northampton almost surprised themselves, didn't they?
Yeah, but I think Northampton since then I've built up again, you know. I think they got that form coming through at the moment. They seem to put some good performance back to back. Clermont is Clermont at the moment. They're second in the French league, but they're playing well. I think they're solid, they're mature, they've got a few players like who control everything. You know, Morgan Parra seems to, even he doesn't shine at international level at the moment, probably is the club level, he control that really much.
You wonder whether you get a second chance like at the Stade Marcel Michelin, like Northampton had. You've got your one opportunity, you need to take it, you need to turn them over. I spoke to Phil Dowson over the weekend, and he's really impressed with the way that the young lads are playing at Northampton. The performance they put in the first 40 minutes against Leicester, that was outstanding to watch. And it was lads that have grown up through the academy system and are now being given an opportunity. So Dan Bigger was outstanding. Combine that sort of the youth and the experience and the top quality players, they might be able to do it again. Let's hope they can.
But if you're the coaching staff at both clubs, you'll look at what happened in the pool stage and surely you'll emphasise defence, won't you? Best defence wins.
Yeah, unless you're playing Kevin Keegan stuff, we'll score more than you. Great to watch. And I guess against two sides like that, you know, Northampton coming at it with players like Hutchinson and Tom Collins that can just light the field up. Clermont, you know, I run out of fingers naming the players that on their side that can take the ball and just do something ridiculous with it and storm 80 metres up the field. That is a game of, arguably, it's Champions Cup rugby, isn't it? Being played in a different competition.
All the Challenge Cup quarterfinals are on BT Sport in the UK and Ireland and beIN Sports in France, with a Clermont-Northampton match also on FR4. For all the latest on this competition, follow at ER Challenge Cup on Twitter and go to the European Rugby Challenge Cup page on Facebook.
Go to HeinekenChampionsCup.com to play Champions Fantasy Rugby.
Yes, it's time to check our fantasy rugby performance. And because it's quarterfinal time, plenty of changes have had to be made. Thomas, who have you brought in?
I've brought in some pretty cheap front rowers. I'm going to give you my tactic. I've gone cheap up front. I've decided they weren't going to light the pitch up. So I've gone Kebble, McAnally and Schumann in my front row. Gray and Nakarawa, Watson, Stander, Matter. He'll be key for me.
Yeah, I've got Matter at number 8.
Mm. Murray, Farrell.
The grunt.
Farrell. Jaco van der Velt, Colby, Gittoon and Jordan Lama. That's a good team, isn't
that
it?
That is a good team. That is a good team.
It's a shame. It's a shame it's taking me to the quarterfinals to try and pick a team before before they play.
So, where's your position? Because I know you want to know. I'm 647th in England and I'm 2,631st in the Global League. And the computer's crashed.
The Global League?
Scroll down. This is great for the listeners.
4,460.
You're miles off me. Looks like the bet saved.
What are your points?
Don't know. All that matters, Thomas, is you are nowhere near this week. You are nowhere near, and we're at the quarterfinal stages, which kept on forgetting. Which is great news.
To be fair, mate, I gave you 2 week head start.
I don't need excuses. I just need your money.
Excuse, just a fact.
Now, you have unlimited changes to play with in order to tweak your sides ahead of the quarterfinals. You can check out all the details at HeinekenChampionsCup.com and get your team sorted ahead of the last 8. There's also daily fantasy rugby, where you can choose a team of players who are in action on one specific match day, something worth getting involved in right now via HeinekenChampionsCup.com. You can check out all the details there on the website and get your team sorted ahead of the last 8. It's James Burridge, Tom May and Florent Rossigneux with you on the Champions Rugby Show. A reminder to cast your vote for the EPCR European Player of the Year. Players from 7 different clubs and all 3 European professional leagues are among the 15 nominees. For Racing, Leo Nakarawa, last season's winner, of course, Finn Russell and Simon Zebo. Saracens have Alex Good and Makavunapola. Toulouse have Antoine Dupont and Cheslin Kolbe. Edinburgh, Willem Matta. Leinster, Sean Cronin, Tyde Furlong and Gary Ringrose. Ulster, Jacob Stockdale. And Munster, Ty Byrne, Joey Carberry and Peter O'Mahony. That is a strong list, fellas. Is there one who's picked your eye so far, Florent?
I think, Scott Dale at the moment playing some great rugby. He's been scoring. He's being instrumental even for Ireland in an average form for Ireland in the Six Nations.
I think you would have gone for the Racing players. Just saying.
Just for those 3 tickets.
Yeah.
How about Matter, Tom, as a standout so far?
He's been brilliant, hasn't he? I'd love to see Colby win it, though. He's been, every time he gets the ball, everyone's, wow, what's he going to do next? Great. It's almost a Barbarians team, that, isn't it?
It really is. The long list will be reduced to 5 players in April following the Heineken Champions Cup semi-finals by a combination of your votes and the verdict of the esteemed judges. Players who are not in the initial list of 15 but who make a significant impact in a quarter-final or a semi-final can still be considered for the final shortlist. The winner, who will receive the Anthony Foley Memorial Trophy, will be announced following the Heineken Champions Cup final at St. James's Park on Saturday the 11th of May. So vote now at HeinekenChampionsCup.com and you'll be in the running to win 2 VIP tickets to the final in Newcastle in May with one night's accommodation courtesy of EPCR. The winner will also be pitchside for the presentation of the Anthony Foley Memorial Trophy. Here's a view on the shortlist from one of the nominees, Alex Good of Saracens.
Obviously, I'm not biased at all, but Makavunapola is a wonderful player. He's had a wonderful year. He's the most miserable bloke out of that list, probably. But he is an extraordinary talent and one that we're very lucky to have at this club. If it gets a smile out of him, then it's worth its weight in gold just to give him that award. So he's pretty special. So yeah, I think on that list as well, apart from Maka, Villiam Mata, just because of that offload against Toulon was, and that game, I thought Edinburgh were exceptional in, watched it. He's been a revelation up there, and I think people probably didn't give him a chance to get through in that group, and what they've done is incredible. And then just in the backs then, I'd probably say Simon Zebo's been pretty good, to be fair. You know, Racing have done very well, he keeps scoring. He's made some beautiful moves out wide against Leicester a few times, and plays with a smile on his face, so he's a good lad.
He's too modest to say, but actually Alex Good's been pretty sweet this season as well. I mean, in the first half I was watching against Harlequins, and a dodgy first half from Harries, he was the one chink of light in that team.
Yeah, he's a brilliant player. I don't agree that he's not being biased, though, by going with Macca.
Now, if you can't be at a quarter-final game, don't forget to watch the Heineken Champions Cup live on TV this weekend. All the matches are on BT Sport in the UK and Ireland. BN Sports is the home of the Champions Cup in France, while FR Der also have the Racing 92 Toulouse match. Channel 4 in the UK and Virgin Media in Ireland are showing Edinburgh against Munster live on free-to-air television. And in the US, you can watch all of the Heineken Champions Cup matches on the NBC Sports Gold platform. Our next episode will be a preview of the semi-finals. Saracens or Glasgow against Edinburgh or Munster. Leinster or Ulster against Racing 92 or Toulouse. Those matches will be played at venues designated by EPCR. The highest ranked clubs on the pool stage will have home country advantage in their respective semi-final games. So, Tom, which of your predictions to make the semis are you most sure about and which of the least?
The least sure about is the harder question, I think. I would say the least sure about, I'll go for the Racing Toulouse game in... well, I thought he was about to jump on me then.
Laurent's eyes just leapt out of his face.
The Racing Toulouse game in Paris. The most confident, I think, is Leinster.
Florent, what about you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've said it earlier. I think Racing, I picked it by heart, but because it's where I grew up. But I think Toulouse got a great chance and a great opportunity there. So I think that's probably the most difficult one for me there. I think Saris is 100% there.
Fellas, thanks very much indeed. That's all we've got time for on the Champions Rugby Show. Thanks to Easton Asewa, Gordon Reid and Michael Bradley. Don't forget, the Heineken Champions Cup quarterfinals gets underway on Saturday the 30th of March with Edinburgh Munster, Saracens Glasgow and Leinster Ulster, with Racing Toulouse on Sunday the 31st. We'll be back ahead of the semis, but until then, stay up to date on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Plus, visit HeinekenChampionsCup.com for Champions Fantasy Rugby and all the best European rugby content. But for now, from Tom May, Florent Rossigner and myself, James Burridge, it's goodbye.